Welcome to the Besties with Breasties podcast. Sarah Hall here. I am a certified health and wellness coach, athletic trainer, mom, and breast cancer survivor. I help women overcome their own mind drama to make mind shifts that open up the possibility for their most empowered and energetic life.
And I am Beth Wilmus, author, speaker, and founder of a human investment organization, otherwise known as a nonprofit, called Faith Through Fire. Our mission is to reduce the fear and anxiety that breast cancer patients feel and replace it with hope and a path toward thriving.
This podcast is about our experiences with breast cancer
and life after as young survivors and moms.
We're talking about vulnerability today, but this is take two because our opening sesh got a little cray cray, which happens sometimes. But yeah, we're talking about vulnerability today, which is something that's was difficult for me. Now, not so much, but it used to be a difficult topic for me. And I think you and I have talked about this, that vulnerability, the willingness to be vulnerable is usually the biggest sign to me that women are going to not only survive breast cancer, but thrive.
Yeah. And it shows up a lot with the people who come through our programs.
Yeah. Yeah.
The struggle with vulnerability, that is.
Yes. Yes. We always joke that Faith Through Fire is full of type A women that struggle to be vulnerable. And so I think
we don't joke.
No. Yeah, yeah. No. But I think the gift of a cancer diagnosis can be that you really aren't given any other choice. You have to be vulnerable when you get hit with that news. And it's really a key to healing. So I'm excited because today we're going to have Kara on. She's a member of Faith Through Fire. We love Kara. And really, I asked her to come on because her story really required vulnerability in order for her to thrive. So we're going to talk about her diagnosis.
And then when her mental health began to suffer.
Yep. And finally, how she had to embrace vulnerability to get the help that she needed. But before we talk to Kara, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Are you feeling scared, overwhelmed, or lost post-treatment? Do you want to reclaim your life and thrive even better than before breast cancer? Faith Through Fire Survivorship Bootcamp is designed for breast cancer survivors who are committed to living their fullest lives. If you're ready to leap forward, seize personal growth, and redefine your journey, this bootcamp will provide the path. You might benefit from our bootcamp if the excitement of completing treatment has worn off, leaving you feeling unsure about your future. You feel confused by your new post-cancer identity and struggle to accept your quote, new normal. You want to enjoy life again, but feel stuck in a cycle of negative emotions. Or you feel disconnected from yourself, others, or God. Our bootcamp offers a structured roadmap that delves deep into four key areas crucial for post-cancer recovery and thriving. Understanding trauma, cultivating a fighting spirit, managing anxiety and intrusive thoughts, and redefining and reshaping your identity so you can rediscover your joy and purpose in life. You can participate in person in St. Louis or online. To join our wait list, visit faiththroughfire.org/survivorship-bootcamp.
Welcome, Kara. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for asking me. Happy to join you today.
All right. Well, share a little bit about your breast cancer journey diagnosis. Like, when were you diagnosed? How did it all happen? Fill us in.
Sure. So my journey began, I do have the BRCA gene. So I had been under some heightened surveillance all through my 30s. A couple weeks before my 40th birthday, I had felt something. I felt a lump, even though I just had a mammogram 6 months before, and after a biopsy, it was confirmed to be triple negative breast cancer at stage two. And so that is really when the journey began, right when I turned 40. That was back in 2018, and that's where I started my journey with a double mastectomy. I went on to do chemotherapy, radiation, and also mental emotional health counseling as part of my treatment plan.
How did you cope? I mean, it sounds like you had the genes, so you knew that there was a risk of breast cancer. How did you cope with the initial diagnosis? Like, when you got the news, were you still shocked or were you kind of expecting it on some level? How did it hit you?
A little bit of both as far as whether I was expecting it. With the gene and a strong, strong family history, for, you know, once I started in my 30s, I kind of felt that it was probably not a matter of if, but just when. But naively, I thought, you know, with doing surveillance every 6 months, that whatever they found, they would find it so, so early that that's when I would have my mastectomy and then I would be done, and then I wouldn't have to think about it ever again. So in that thinking, I wasn't surprised by the diagnosis. I was surprised when I was educated on the different types of breast cancer and then realizing my treatment was going to need to go beyond surgery.
Yeah, you're definitely not the first person who has felt disappointed in the fact that surveillance and early detection doesn't necessarily mean avoiding treatment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Because like I was stage two too, and I could see how that would be really disappointing. You're thinking that if they catch it, it's going to be stage zero, right?
Yeah. And you were doing all the things. You were getting your surveillance done, and then,
yeah.
And then here you are, stage two.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And that was a big misunderstanding a little bit on my part, where I did go back a little bit to my oncologist and say, when you are educating people on this heightened surveillance, you know, I don't know, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but I definitely feel like the sooner you know, you know, I've tried to share with my cousins that have the gene, hey, it doesn't just mean you have the gene, it means you could have something really fast and aggressive as well. So definitely don't just sit back on your laurels and think that even heightened surveillance is enough. Like, be super proactive and don't, you know, obviously, it could have happened anyway, but instead of getting the rug pulled out from under you that way, which is how I kind of felt, definitely more education is better.
Yeah, absolutely. What was going on in your personal life when you got this news?
Sure. I'm married. I was married probably about 5.5 years then, was working full time. My husband and I were in the process of adopting a child. We'd started that process about 6 months before. So we were definitely in the thick of that and hopefully waiting to adopt. So that was kind of on the forefront of my goals and ambitions and dreams and hopes. And then obviously that took a little bit of a back burner when my treatment had to become a primary focus with my health.
I want to kind of dive into your biggest challenges during treatment. But before we do that, you guys want to do Boobs in the News?
Let's do it.
Boobs in the News is a fun segment where we read funny tweets by real people or ridiculous news stories.
Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News! Boobs in the News!
All right, you ready?
Lay it on me.
Name of this story is Tutu Wearing Spider Monkey Found Wandering Loose in Missouri.
Wait. What's a spider monkey?
What?
Is that like a small monkey?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Get this girl a cracker. You're hungry. Your fasting's
a
not working.
Cracker. I'm not having mental clarity right now.
No, the fasting's not doing its job. All right. So this just happened. Sheriff's deputies in Missouri came to the rescue of a spider monkey wearing a pink tutu near a busy highway. How funny would it be to be on the highway and you're driving and you see a spider monkey in a
I'd
tutu?
Be like, am I tripping?
Yeah.
Like, did I just see that?
That's when you're like, what is going on? So this was in Jefferson County, and the sheriff's office there said that deputies responded to the area of highways 21 and M because they had reports of a subject monkeying around.
Oh my gosh.
Oh dear Lord.
Way to play on the words.
They arrived to find a spider monkey dressed in what appeared to be a tutu.
Oh my gosh, this reminds me of Talladega Nights when he goes, I'm gonna come at you like a spider monkey.
That's what everybody thinks.
Yes.
That's what everybody thinks when they hear spider monkey now. After careful negotiations and some coaxing, deputies were able to get close enough to get hands-on with the subject and bring this banana situation under control without incident.
Oh my gosh.
I love it that they're referring to the monkey as the subject. Like he's like a criminal.
Yeah, well. He didn't know what's happening. I'm sure he didn't put that tutu on himself.
Right. The public safety guy said that the monkey actually approached one of the deputies, who was a canine handler. He said the monkey actually kind of came up and tugged on his pant leg. So he didn't really know what to do. He squatted down and was trying to offer some sort of safety. And he said the monkey reached out and grabbed his hands. And he said, okay, I guess we'll just stand here together until we figure out what to do. It says,
can you imagine?
I am loving this story because I always think it looks so cute when like little monkeys grab your finger and It says the monkey was found to have fled from a nearby home and was returned safely to its caretaker. I think the best part of this story is that in this person's private home, he has his monkey wearing a tutu.
Yeah. Crazy.
Like he got out on the loose and that is him
no,
and his
that,
natural,
that,
that's
that
his natural
monkey
state.
Was retaliating because he's like, I don't like pink. I want blue.
Right.
Like,
right.
I
right,
mean,
right. It's like, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of living with this person who's
dressing
me
here.
Up.
I'm right. out of here.
Do you ever see that when you, well, you don't have animals, but when we, like when the kids want to like dress up the dog and they put mm-hmm. stuff on the dog, he just looks mortified.
Yes.
Like absolutely God. Mortified. He's just like, this is humiliating.
For all the pets I get, I will endure this.
Yes. It's like the opposite of humans, right? If we're naked, we're mortified. If an animal has clothes on, they're just like, this is humiliating.
Have you seen that? What is that movie with the bunny? He's the cop. And they walk into the...
When he doesn't have pants on?
Yes. Yeah. He goes, oh, you're naked. And he's like, you know what I think is weird? Clothes on animals.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Well,
Zootopia. That's it.
That's yeah. Zootopia. Yeah. Well, that's the same. Isn't that the same cartoon where he goes in and the sloth is handling like his license?
Yes.
And he can't get
and he tells him a joke and it's very long. Yeah,
oh,
it's funny.
Oh my gosh. It's so funny.
Yeah. Jason Bateman mm-hmm. plays the fox. I just love him.
He's Jason so Bateman is so funny on so many
funny.
Levels. Actually, you know the movie Game Night? Have you watched that?
Yes.
I
when they're trying to open that wine bottle, I was losing my mind.
That wasn't the part that made me crack up hysterically. It's when he gets hurt and she's trying to dig the bullet out of him and she
yes, that he's drinking the wine.
Oh,
yes, yes.
Okay, same
yeah,
scene.
Yeah, that and the dog when the dog gets bloody in that one room and he's like playing the
If you guys so have not funny. Seen Game Night, yeah. it is like the best movie.
This just turned into movie recommendations.
It did. But Game Night is so hysterical. Sarah and I are just like dying.
Oh my gosh.
There's your boobs in the news.
Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news. Bibs in the news.
All right, we're back. The reason that we wanted to have you on, Kara, is because I think your story is so... Oh, amazing. Because I think so many women are going to relate to it, but it required a little bit of vulnerability. So can you kind of explain to people when you started noticing during your breast cancer treatment that you were beginning to struggle mentally?
Sure. I, you know, very blessed with an outstanding support system. My husband, my mom, my stepdad, strong faith, you know, had so many people supporting me at church and just my friends in general. And so nothing lacking on that end at all, with a strong outlook, a strong prognosis, a good perspective. But when things really hit a wall for me, coming home from my mastectomy, you know, things were going okay. I was just a couple weeks out from getting my drains out, was just following all the steps. My husband was at work and I looked over, I was journaling, doing some colored pencils, and my arm was humongously swollen, and I knew that wasn't right. And long story short, there is they had placed my port when they did my double mastectomy in preparation for chemo, and I had developed mini blood clots around my port, just where its placement was, and the size of my circulatory system did not agree, and was immediately admitted to the hospital, put on blood thinners, and this was all just a couple weeks after my surgery, and I still had a couple weeks before I was starting chemo. So that is, for me, where I see things changed, especially I mentioned I was journaling. I can see, looking back on the notes I was leaving the day before that and the day of, it really changed after that. I became hypervigilant about my diet. A lot of insomnia developed at this time. I was analyzing everything based on if my blood would get too thin. I'd had some past trauma. Both my aunt and my father had experienced blood clots as part of their cancer treatment. My mind immediately went there. Unfortunately, both of them had passed away due to some complications with blood clots. And so because of that untreated trauma and my mind just automatically going to worst case scenario, even my oncologist recognized, she tried to tell me every appointment, Kara, that cancer is much more dangerous than your blood clots, but I couldn't get my mind past them.
Oh, that's interesting that she approached it in that way. Like, don't mm-hmm. worry about the blood clots. Mm-hmm. You need to focus on your cancer. Did she know about your previous unresolved trauma with your family members, you know, in the blood clots?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm sure it's all just a little bit of a blur, but yeah. I do believe I'd shared that with her. And she could just see, I mean, every appointment I saw her every 3 weeks, and every appointment I would just come in there with a notepad of, you know, I have this bruise, or I noticed this when I went to the restroom, or, and she would just, you know, she was patient with me, But she realized that I just had this hypervigilance on the blood clot and not even, you know, necessarily the chemo or the cancer treatment or anything like that. So I do think she knew that. She was honest with me in that she was a tactician with oncology. She had an excellent bedside manner, but she was very upfront with me that mental health was not her field. And so she wasn't comfortable managing if I requested. She would put me in touch with all the resources as far as counselors, but she wanted to turn everything over to that as far as if I added, you know, anything like a prescription or anything that addressed that anxiety.
Were your family members noticing at home that you also had this hypervigilance? Like, how was it impacting your husband, for example?
Oh, absolutely. It was a big strain on everyone that was that close to me, as far as my husband, my mom. I was afraid to be by myself, partially probably maybe because when I noticed the blood clots initially, I was by myself. And so then my mind was always just like, well, what if I wouldn't have been able to make it to the phone? So it did. It became, I mean, my husband would leave for work and I would immediately call my mom and expect her to be there in 5 minutes. Or she would try to leave 10 minutes before my husband got home from work and I would follow her down the driveway. I mean, just not acting like myself at all. I was a 40-year-old woman and I had really just felt that I had to be with someone at all times. If I was by myself, I would call my, you know, telenurse to talk to my telenurse on the phone and tell them what was going on. Just, it was a side of me that was not myself.
Kara, how long did this go on? How long were you feeling this way? How long were you hyper-focused on the blood clots? Like, give us a time frame. And when did it kind of all come to a head and you realized you needed some extra help?
Sure. The blood clot diagnosis came in June and my chemo started in July. My chemo went through October. So all the time, you know, this hypervigilance is continuing, this fear of being alone. My radiation started in November and completed in December. But the benefit of receiving all those medical treatments is that I was always being seen by a medical professional, you know, during my chemo every 3 weeks, during my radiation every day. And so I completed my radiation on Christmas Eve of 2018. And over that Christmas holiday and break, I remember, you know, being in church and telling my husband I wanted to go to the ER. I remember being at a family gathering and, you know, tapping my foot and I wanted to go to the hospital. Not like me at all. I love Christmas. I love my family. It's so special to me. And to remember back to wanting to go to the hospital instead of be with my family, that's when I knew my mind was not in a good place. My husband recognized it as I was saying things that were scaring him in a way, you know, telling him, I want you to get married if something should happen to me, you know, being afraid to drive my car because I'd have a bad thought at a stoplight, talking about my medicines, that was scaring him. And he's like, Kara, you know, it was on him as my husband, out of love for me, when we were at the ER, where I was just checking in. I was just wanting someone to take my blood pressure. I was just wanting someone to tell me my oxygen was okay. But it was at one of those ER visits over that Christmas holiday, right around the new year, where the doctor said, I think you need to consider being admitted for mental health treatment for your own good.
How did that feel when you heard that news? Was there relief in it or was it fear or what? How did that hit you?
Yeah, I can't think of one word that can explain it, because until you're in those shoes, it's overwhelming. I will tell you the visual that I strongly remember. It was nighttime, so when they did take me up to, you know, the third floor, whatever floor it was of the hospital, you know, they told me, you know, this is where you need to say goodbye to your mom and your husband, and we're going to take you in the elevator. I remember being backed into that elevator and watching them, and that hit, and that visual always hits me. But I will tell you, that elevator ride and then opening up and starting that journey for my days there, it was a relief, because, you know, I hate to say that now I had like a 24-hour, you know, medical team around me, but I did. But it wasn't just so much that. I remember the ER doctor that recommended the mental health care. Her advice to me, which I've seen many times since, was, you know, you're just seeing yourself as a patient. And I couldn't get that patient mentality out of my mind. She's like, just go to the drugstore and buy a new lipstick, buy a new lotion, smell good and go out to dinner. And I couldn't get there. But I will tell you, when I got up to that third floor and started drinking coffee again and started listening to music again and really started feeling like myself again, then it was a relief. I don't want to say I regret not doing it sooner, but wow.
Could you have done it without feeling safe in that medical facility? Could you have felt safe enough to partake in those daily pleasures? Or did that give you the level of comfort you needed in order to start participating in life again?
Yes. Those words that you just said were exactly how I felt. I would not have done it on my own. I mean, I would not drink coffee at home. I would not go out to lunch with my friends. I mean, I love to read. I couldn't even concentrate on reading. I would not take walks. I remember trying to walk around a Home Depot with my mom and having a panic attack at Home Depot. Like, I couldn't do it without those walls. So exactly what you said, that gave me the confidence to experiment again with life because I knew I was in a safe place.
I think so many people listening are going to be able to relate to this. It's really interesting because right before we got on with you, Kara, I got a text message from one of our survivor mentors at Faith Through Fire. And she's like, my mentee is really struggling to the point where she's wondering if she should put herself in an inpatient program. Like, how should I advise her? Like, do you guys know of anybody? And it just struck me. The timing, you know, I knew I was coming on with you and the fact that this is happening. This is a young woman who, you know, has young children. I think it's so much more common than people think. And I just wonder, you know, how many women are needlessly suffering out there with this? To your point, you had this amazing support system who could kind of reflect back to you that they had concerns about you, that they felt like this wasn't normal. And ultimately, you had to make a change, a pretty drastic change, in order to get out of the cycle that you were in.
And if you think about the steps, like she noticed that she wasn't being herself. Her family noticed she wasn't being herself. And then she had to, and then all the providers around her noticed the same thing. So to get to that step, just think about on a previous podcast, we had somebody, one of us had mentioned a lot of people say, well, I'm not that bad. Because we kind of convince ourselves that it's not that bad, and we talk ourselves out of it until everyone is saying it, and then you're convinced. Okay, I do need the help.
Yeah,
I'm not participating in life anymore.
So let's talk about the vulnerability that it takes to admit, like, yes. I'm not okay. Was that hard for you, Kara, to like come to that conclusion, or were you just so sick of being sick and tired that you were like, I'll do whatever? I mean, because what piece of vulnerability, you know, play in this?
Sure. Well, I think for any of us, you know, we love to be the helpers and we love to give help. And I did not like that role reversal. I did not like being the one receiving help. And even, you know, talking to my oncologist, I remember telling her, I'm like, you know, I want to be the one that's helping. And she told me, she's like, there will be a time when you will be able to help others because of this. But now you need, you know, it's kind of like when you're on a plane and it's like, put your mask on first so you can help your kids. And that's where she was at with me. She's like, you've got to put this health of yours first so you can help others. And I remember I didn't have the best attitude. I remember my mom taking me to a counselor fairly early on. And she, you know, no offense to her at all, she was not trained in OCD or, you know, even medical oncology, those kind of things. I don't want to say she was just a counselor. She was a very talented, trained, educated counselor. But I went to her, you know, I saw someone 15, 20 years younger than me just starting out in her counseling career. And I just walked into there every day being like, how can she possibly make me feel better?
It does sort of feel like sometimes vulnerability is born out of our exhaustion from defensiveness. When people come at us and are like, you're not acting the same, you're not acting the same, I think our first instinct as like women who are, we've got our stuff together and we're in control of it all, we're always like, I don't know what you're talking about. I am fine. Just hear the tone in that. And then by the time you've heard it enough and you start to see the things yourself, that's when you're like, okay, now my vulnerability is born out of my exhaustion of having to stick up for myself.
Yeah. I think that it's interesting too, your point about this young counselor, because we do get that a lot where women will go see a counselor and they'll feel like this person, and it's happening more and more that there's a new generation of counselors out there. Yeah. They're all younger,
yeah,
right? They're in their 20s or their 30s. And you're thinking, you have no lived experience. Yeah. Like, you have no lived experience with trauma. You haven't lost anybody yet. Nothing in your world is broken. Mm-hmm. How on earth are you going to truly guide me? I think there's some truth to that. I think counselors are like any other profession. You have to find one that's a good fit for you.
Yeah.
So I always encourage women, like, if you have a bad experience, keep pursuing other providers until you find one that understands your situation. I think that, you know, your feelings about that were valid. But I also think just by showing up, you know, that was a step. So she probably, you probably fired her, would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, to your credit, to say that that is excellent advice to keep trying, because one doesn't speak to all. There are good fits out there. And I bet that counselor that I saw is a good fit for a lot of her patients and clients now. But upon being discharged from my in-house inpatient treatment, I went to a 6-week partial hospitalization where I went every day intensively for 6 weeks for coaching and goal setting and a small group sessions on, you know, just basic. Like I said, I remember it was around the time of the Super Bowl. So one of my big goals was to go to my friend's Super Bowl party, even if I just went for half an hour. And being discharged after that intense partial hospitalization, they set me up with a counselor who made all the difference. She was someone that I continued to see regularly up until she retired, because she was a good fit. We had a lot in common, you know, closer in age was important, and a lot of understanding of medical situations as well. Mm-hmm. So that persistence to find the one that is the right for you. Do not be afraid. Do not think they're going to take it personally if you choose someone else, because the relationship is only for the most important for your health.
I think that's a really good point mm-hmm. to make. We hear often from patients who aren't satisfied with the medical care that they're getting that they feel guilty going to somebody else, like it's being disloyal to their provider, and to which we respond, who cares?
Well, and I think in mental health specifically, it can be hard to jump, because a lot of times you're paying out of pocket. It's not always covered by insurance. And you're like, I have to re-establish a relationship with a new healthcare provider.
Well, that can feel very overwhelming.
It can feel very overwhelming, but also it is worth it. Like mm-hmm. when you find the right one.
There's a difference too. Okay,
dating.
So you were, yeah, it's a relationship. I mean, yeah. It's like your oncologist. You better like them, because you're going to be with them for a little bit. Okay, you mentioned it, but I, how long were you in the inpatient facility before you did the 6-week intensive outside?
I will be honest. The first time, I want to say it was right around 5 days.
Okay.
And then, of course, was ready to be discharged. But just like when the scaffolding comes down, when you're building a building, the scaffolding came down a little too quick. So I found myself back in the inpatient for another 5 days. And this time they had time to see what support do I need after discharge that removes the scaffolding more gradually. And that's where they referred me to the 6-week partial hospitalization mental health treatment. And I'll be honest, I went kicking and screaming there too. I remember not my proudest moment, my mom dragging me in that door. But when I left, it was a whole new story. I had, you know, letters from nurses and fellow participants, and it was like a graduation after those 6 weeks. It felt really good.
And I think the reason I wanted to hit upon that is because, you know, counselors and therapists were always recommending that at Faith Through Fire, but there are times where you may need a more intensive experience. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like that was the situation that you benefited from. And so we really want to encourage women that are listening that if you feel like, you know when things are really not good. And if you need a more intensive experience, we want to destigmatize, right?
Asking for it.
Yeah, asking for it, participating in these inpatient programs, because I think a lot of people think that inpatient equates to crazy.
Yeah.
And And it's not that way at all. Right. Like, the reason we wanted to have you on, Kara, is like, and Sarah's been very honest with her mental health, you know, after her breast cancer diagnosis and the dark place it took her. This is very common. This happens in the human experience. And we want to make sure that people understand that asking for help and getting that intensive care is just, it's so wise and so smart and such a key to having a high quality of life.
And you tried all the things. I think what is really interesting about your story and is a really good example for other people is that you tried counseling before you went inpatient, and it wasn't touching it. And then everybody around you just kind of like kept noticing the same things, and then you noticing the things, and then being vulnerable to say, yes, this is what I need. But then also to come out and then know that you needed to go back in, like, that took a lot of vulnerability because, and I don't know if that
was
on your
request.
They
were dragging her kicking and screaming.
Well, that was to the 6-week program, yeah. but knowing that you needed to go back in for more time to reintegrate.
I mean,
and to learn how to integrate.
We all know you didn't have to go, right? Like, they were dragging you. They were threatening you. They were telling you, hey, you need to do this. But you, you know, at the end of the day, you didn't have to go. You did this because you knew deep down that this was something that, you know, wasn't right.
It's that defensiveness.
It's that defensiveness. It's that fear of embracing the vulnerability. So I want to end with your thoughts to anybody listening that might be encountering similar difficulties. But before we do that, let's hear from our second sponsor.
Thrivent is a proud sponsor of Faith Through Fire. Thrivent believes money is a tool and not a goal. The Gateway Financial Group with Thrivent is local to the St. Louis area and can work with you to create a financial strategy that reflects your priorities and helps you protect the things that matter to you, like family and giving back. Please call 314-783-4214 to schedule a free consultation with one of Thrivent's Gateway Financial Advisors.
All right, we are back. So any final words that you want to leave with our listeners as far as, you know, if anybody that's in the same...
Yeah, I was going to say, let's give them some encouragement. Talk about your life today, because you have a beautiful life.
You're like 6 years out? Is that 2018, 19?
Yes. I really thank the Lord. I turn to the Bible a lot, but especially there's a verse that says, rejoice in our sufferings. Suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope. That's why I love the Faith Through Fire mission, is that dovetails with that hope, because my sufferings have brought so much hope, and I have been able to prayerfully use those sufferings to help others by telling them, you know, this can get in your rearview mirror. It seems like it's the only thing in your head when you wake up in the morning now, and it seems like all you can think about at the grocery store now, but there will come a day where this is just a season, and it will be behind you, and it will be something that I don't want you to forget it. I just want you to grow from it and be more beautiful. Those are not empty words coming from me. I was contemplating, you know, not ever getting to be a mother. And my husband and I, 10 months after I finished my treatment, we from the same hospital got a phone call that there was a beautiful baby boy there that was a few hours old to adopt. And if that wasn't blessing enough, 2 years later, it happened again with a beautiful little girl. And so now this Christmas looked a lot different for me than that anxious Christmas of 2018. I enjoyed it with my husband and my 5-year-old and 3-year-old, and I can't thank God enough for making me healthy enough to enjoy this life.
I got chills.
Yeah. We're going to end on that note.
Yep,
there's
for
nothing,
sure.
There's nothing better than that. Thank you so much, Kara, for coming on and sharing your story and for being vulnerable, not only in your own personal journey, but then also, again, by sharing your story today. So thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
All right. Until next time.
See ya.
Thank you for being a listener of the Besties with Breasties podcast. If this podcast had a positive impact on your journey, leave us a review or consider becoming a supporter. You can donate with the link in the show notes or at faiththroughfire.org. This episode was hosted by Sarah Hall and Beth Wilmes, audio and production edits by Innovative Frequencies.